So, I don't know about all of you, but I have come to have a very warm place in my heart for the Parmi over the course of this year. I mean, I knew always that they were wonderful qualities, but I mean, I've really gotten to know them and I've been really happy to have spent this year diving into them. And I feel like it's just the beginning of my relationship with them. The Sunday Sit teachers met this week for our monthly planning meeting, and it was pretty much unanimous among us that we had learned a lot this year and we were seeing the Parmis with new eyes. They're feeling more accessible and more essential. These qualities are not just to be admired from afar with reverence. We have a new confidence in our ability to practice with them and a new appreciation of how cultivating them benefits us personally, while at the same time extending outward to benefit others. The Paramis help us live skillfully in the world, and they are essential to the health of our families and greater communities. Imagine if everyone in all the communities around the world were committed to developing these qualities. And I'm going to read them one more time. Generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. We used four main texts this year. Parmi, Ways to Cross Life's Floods by Ajahn Sucitto. Pay Attention for Goodness Sakes by Sylvia Boorstein. Creating a Life of Integrity by Gail Stark. And The World Could Be Otherwise, Imagination and the Bodhisattva Path by Norman Fisher. We referenced Ajahn Sucitto's book a lot, and as the title suggests, he focuses on the idea that the Paramis could enable us to cross life's floods safely and reach the other shore. What did he mean? He said we could make a temple for ourselves of the Parmis. They could be a refuge from our overwhelmed reactions to the worldly winds of samsara, exemplified by pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and shame. As we slowly but surely cultivate the Parmis, we are learning to let go of clinging to our views and opinions, clinging to the trance of becoming someone who you fill in the blank with what you desire to become sometime in the future, not what you are in this moment. Letting go of clinging to the trance of pleasant sensations, and letting go of clinging to delusion or ignorance. He says that the Parmi give us a ground, an vantage point that offers us a kind of security so we can look into what is troubling and challenging. As we cultivate the Paramis, we're moving in a direction toward perfection and freedom, away from suffering caused by clinging and remorse. I wonder if you can reflect for a moment about your own experience with any of the Paramis. So just think a minute about the Paramis. Do you have a sense of a Parami as a temple? Does that resonate with you? A temple or a refuge or a vehicle of any kind crossing the floods of worldly existence? What Parami comes to your mind? If you'd like, you could write in the text. I'm going to ask you if you would, just to see what comes up for you. You know, what parmes are a highlight. And then you could also write next to the parmi a word that expresses the value of that parmi to you. I'm thinking of Alberto Rios's poem on generosity, giving, and he might write open hands offering or open hands receiving, or he might simply write connection. So if you wouldn't mind, if you would like to join us, it would just be nice to share your feelings about one of the parmes. Which one is really important to you, or have you worked with particularly? And what is its value to you? Just a word, just a way for us to connect around what we've experienced this year, if you wouldn't mind. If you have the, but you can take some time to reflect. See if anybody's going to do that. Oh, we've got some responses. Good. So Julie says, patience is huge when I don't like the feelings that I'm experiencing. And Sue says, renunciation and kindness together. Kindness helps me open to the need to let go. And Claire says, equanimity. Maybe because it's the most recent, or maybe because the timing, but equanimity is a lifeline. And Deanna says, generosity, letting go. And wisdom, says Sue, was a turning point. Truthfulness rang true for me. Mike says, resolve. Steadiness when the storm, steadfastness when the storm hits. And Carol says, equanimity, acceptance. Karina, equanimity leads me toward an absence of regret. Lyndall, equanimity feels like, to me, like a vehicle to cross the floods. And Steve, kindness, sometimes just a smile. Megan, I joined when we were practicing loving kindness, which I feel as a practice of opening. Anne, equanimity reminds me, leads me towards the others. And Candace, patience and kindness with renunciation when I feel overwhelmed. Thank you, everybody. That was really nice to read through those and just see how, valuable they are, and different ones resonate with different people at different times. Okay. So maybe some of you feel the same way I do, that it's been a good year. I and all the other teachers, we all felt that way. Okay. So, the Buddha didn't have a teacher. He didn't have the suttas to guide him. He didn't have the Four Noble Truths laid out for him, or the Eightfold Path to Awakening, or the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. It is said that when the Buddha sat down under the Bodhi tree and resolved not to get up until he awakened, Mara, the spirit of his inner tyrant, confronted him, throwing darts of doubt at him, asking, "Who do you think you are? What makes you think you deserve to awaken?" And it is said that it was the ten paramis that he had perfected over the course of many lifetimes that gave him the confidence to face Mara and not give in to doubt. They say that he said to Mara, "I am ripe with all the perfections needed to sweep you out of my heart." And that is when he touched the earth and called up the earth as his witness. So the Buddha perfected the paramis over many lifetimes. these qualities were not simply bestowed upon him in a perfect form. It was a process. Ajahn Suchito says somewhere in his book that what it takes to cultivate the paramis is really important. We're actually building character, or as Gail Stark says in her book, we are building a life of integrity as we practice with any of the parami. And that is because it takes so much to go against the stream of our conditioning and the comfort of our habits. Also, the paramis naturally work together. They reinforce each other. So when we're cultivating one, we're likely cultivating others too. It seems as though all the paramis require resolve and energy and patience. And then what about loving kindness to ourselves as we start out and make mistakes? Ajahn Suchito describes a process of practice with the paramis. It's a process that has three stages. So it's not a matter of looking at these wonderful traits and just saying, oh, I don't have that, I have that, that's easy, that's not. It's not like that. It's a process. And in the first stage, he calls it an initiating stage, we start to think about them. We just start to think about them. I mean, how many people think about the paramis every day or any day in a week? You know, that's important, that this is a value. And we have an intention to practice with them. We may not be very good at them, but we have the intention. So don't discount this beginning. Even having an intention to act with generosity or ethics or renunciation means we are acknowledging the value of that parami in our life, in contrast to the value of things that we are commonly drawn to that are reinforced in our culture. Things like sensual pleasure, praise, fame, gain. So this is a notable step in discernment regarding where true happiness lies. If we have the intention, we are practicing with the paramis. That's stage one, according to Ajahn Suchito. In the second stage, he calls it gathering, we're putting forth effort. When it's hard, we know, and we persevere. We make mistakes, but we learn from them. And we forgive ourselves, knowing that we're learners, still learning life's lessons. We call forth other paramis and inner strengths like the Brahmaviharas for support. And we don't forget the critical importance of meditation. We have spiritual friends and teachers in the Sangha to emulate and who give us feedback. I think this is the stage where we spend a lot of our time in the practice, most of our time with the paramis. It takes patience and resolve and self-compassion, which are all paramis. As we cultivate the paramis, all kinds of unwholesome motives and inclinations can come to light. So the Brahmaviharas are especially needed to help us accept with kindness and equanimity how human we are. The Brahmaviharas, loving kindness, compassion, gladness, empathetic joy, and equanimity. The third stage, which Ajahn Suchito calls completion, this is when the parami is firmly established. We can count on it. It's unshakable. We have confidence like the Buddha had confronting Mara on the night of his awakening. We know that we can sweep out of our heart all doubt with respect to that parami. That's the perfection. And it is said that that's how the Buddha became a Buddha. So those are just some ideas about the process of cultivating the paramis. And there are a few other qualities that have been mentioned this year that are really important too, that are not specifically named paramis, but they're really important. So Sylvia Boorstein says it in her title, "Pay attention for goodness sake." Developing wise reflection is an essential part of practicing with paramis. This includes mindful pausing to allow time for paying attention with heedfulness. Heedfulness is paying unbiased attention so we don't filter our perceptions of experience for purposes, say, of self-protection or to accommodate our desires. The Buddha really stressed heedfulness. He talked about being heedful when he died in his last instructions. And he said those who were heedless were moving towards death, and those who were heedful were moving towards awakening. He said heedfulness involved listening deeply for the truth in the moment, and this heedfulness opened the gates of the deathless. So it's really important. Ajahn Sucitta suggested that we build pauses into our day to take stock, that we could ask a simple question like, "What is true in this moment?" And that the pause could be brief, 10 seconds, but to do it several times a day. The purpose is to develop clarity, clear understanding, which is one of the three foundations he says we need to cultivate the paramis. We need empathy, we need clarity, and we need, let's see, the second one was empathy, clarity. I've forgotten the second one. But I can find it. So clarity, how do you get clear? You have to pay attention. You have to have unbiased attention, which of course relates to that parami of truthfulness and wisdom. So the kind of practice helps us uncover this taking stock and listening deeply, what is true in the moment, helps us uncover hidden assumptions that can keep us trapped in our habits and conditioning. And that's the pressure that we have to resist in order to develop the paramis. We have to move out of habit and conditioning. So I'm going to share an experience I had recently that made me remember the talk about heedfulness in the Parami book. So I have a suet feeder for the birds in my yard that hangs from what I thought was a squirrel-proof pole. It's not squirrel-proof. The squirrels shimmy up the pole regularly. They hang upside down from the hook, which holds the suet cage, and they munch on the suet for what seems like several minutes at a time. I grow through a lot of suet. Well, on this particular day, a few days ago, I was feeling impatient with the squirrel that was hanging upside down eating the suet. And because he was eating, or it was eating, the last of my suet supply, which meant that I was going to need to go to the store to get more soon, in order for the birds to have some. So, and it was really cold and stormy, and I didn't want to leave the birds without their suet. So I decided to try to scare the squirrel away so that there would be some left for the birds that morning. I went out on my back porch and I yelled and clapped my hands, and the squirrel was unmoved. So then I thought, okay, I'll clap, yell, and throw something. Not to hit the squirrel, but something noticeable enough to scare it so that it would run off. And I picked up this large paper yard waste bag, which, is soft, so I knew that wasn't going to be a big problem. but it was big. And I clapped and yelled and threw the bag, which landed 10 feet from the squirrel, about 10 feet. And that did it. The squirrel jumped down from where he was hanging upside down and ran off into the bushes. But he left a piece of his tail behind, a tuft. I don't know if it was a tuft or an actual piece, was stuck to the hook of the pole. And I felt horrible. I didn't know if it was, yeah, I didn't know really what it was, but it didn't matter. I thought, how careless of me. I didn't really have ill will toward the squirrel, but I saw that I had scared and hurt it unnecessarily. It was just doing what squirrels do. I felt remorse the whole day, and when I woke up the next morning, I had a new appreciation for the importance of heedfulness and a new recognition of how easy it is to be careless. We are so interconnected. I know that I've been heedless many other times in my life that I'm not even aware of, but I see that the practice with these paramis has upped the ante on my actions. I think I understand better the words from the five recollections that the Buddha asks us to think about every day. My actions are the ground on which I stand. They're my only true belongings. I cannot avoid the consequences of my actions. So, we've gotten to know these paramis over the course of the year, some to a greater degree than others. And it's time that we can talk about these again with each other, kind of a summing up, you know, a taking stock. How do you feel about the value of practicing with the paramis as a whole? Remembering that developing one often supports the development of others. Are there certain paramis that particularly resonate with you? Which have you made progress with this year? Remembering that the intention of the paramis is to be for our long-term benefit, for the benefit of others, and to lead to peace. In what way has the parami been a benefit? Which parami is most challenging? Which do you not understand very well? I know I don't understand energy very well. Every time I look at it, I think I've got to read more about that. You know, why is that a parami? So this is a time to reflect and share with each other. I'll put you in breakout groups. Welcome back, everyone. If you'd like to share, this is a time to do it, and you can just unmute yourself or raise your hand if you want to share and all. Whoops. So would anybody like to share what you talked about regarding the paramis? Suze.
I'll share two things. One is I said that for me, going back number of months, my commitment to renounce worry has really served me in November. And the other thing that I shared is that the resource that we've used this year, Norman Fisher's book, we don't talk about very much. Candace did a couple weeks ago, which I appreciated, but creativity and imagination can maybe help us look at some of our stuck situations and how we might use a parami differently instead of just kind of linear thinking in all the same old ways. And just because we're often stuck. We're just entangled and stuck. And The World Could Be Otherwise by Norman Fisher. I held it up in my group.
Yes. No, thank you, Suze. I agree. I think it would be Wonderful and just like imagery and other things. I totally agree with you. So maybe when you do your talk, Suze, you can bring some of those ideas out for us.
Yeah, that's at the end of the month. Yeah. I haven't even started working on it.
No, I know.
Maybe I'm inspired now.
No, I was inspired, and a lot of people mentioned imagination when you talked about it, Candace. So I'll hand it over to you now. You can unmute yourself. Thanks, Suze.
That's very gratifying. I love that book so much. I've worked on it in two different KM groups, and it's just sort of like a Bible for me. But what I, and this is kind of on the same topic. One of the things that I brought up in our group, we had a great discussion, was how energy to me at first seemed a bit of a pushing thing, a negative thing. And then I realized as I was working with it, as I've been working with it recently, is it can be just a very gentle nudge to put a little more effort into this. So when I'm feeling spun up about something, to notice and put a little effort into patience and be kind to myself about it, and just see if putting a little effort into bringing myself back to the path gently, gently. So energy becomes just this little nudge, this little, almost like a support. I'll hold you up a little bit so that you can try this. And then somebody mentioned just toward the end of it was about truthfulness. And I thought, you know, truthfulness is another one that I tend to see as a negative at first. Oh, we're going to be honest with ourselves and all the thing. But it can really help us see what really means something to us. And so it can be really positive, too. And I think now I'm going to be playing this the rest of the month with turning them around to the positive. All of these paramis and seeing how supportive they are and kind. So anyway, that was my inspiration this morning.
Thank you so much. And I got from help from you with the energy, because that one is always just kind of murky to me. So thank you. Who else would like to share a few words about a parami? Linda, go ahead.
This isn't exactly about a parami, but I read more about practicing them. I really appreciated that you talked about those three stages of working with the paramis that Ajahn Suchito mentioned. And I feel like this year was a really good year because we were really encouraged to take it beyond that first stage where we're just kind of thinking about them and have sort of an intention to practice. And I think I've spent many years in that stage with the paramis. But this year we were really encouraged to do concrete things to try to help cultivate them. And that made all the difference. I feel like I really can practice with them now and not just kind of think about them. So that was a big help.
Thank you, Lyndall, for sharing that. And the practice, it's part of the practice. Go ahead, Julie.
Yeah, I just wanted to second what Lyndall said and say that, thanks for the reminder of, you know, the practice. And it kind of dovetails for me with the whole loving kindness parami too, because, you know, I mean, it's certainly for me anyway, there are times when I jump into modes where I'm judging myself for not, you know, not being as far along on one of these. And then I can remember, to be kind to myself. And I know it sounds really simple and straightforward, but boy, does that help. I mean, it just really helps in daily life and certainly in meditation as well. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Julie. Yeah, I've really shifted from that list, looking at them and just thinking, oh, wow, wouldn't it be nice if I could be this, 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 and this, to seeing that it's part of the path, you know, that we can aspire and we can do things that take us there. Yeah, yeah. And also appreciating them in other people. You know, just appreciating, noticing them. You know, I like that attention. Pay attention. Where do you see these paramis in action? And people who are treating you in those ways, and then we can remember, yeah, I can do that too. Would anyone else like, we have about another minute if anybody else wants to share. It looks like there, Nikhil.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I really appreciated your talk, and especially the story you shared about the squirrel.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that just perfectly, I feel like for me that perfectly encapsulated why we practice. So just that when we're in the moment, we don't take actions that we regret later on. Yeah. We're just kind of like able to act in the way that we truly want to. So I appreciate that story. And you also just like, yeah, your reminder just to, just now for like, you know, where do we see these paramis and others? And it's really helpful too.
Yeah. Thanks. Yep. Well, just to let you know, the squirrel has come back and he is still eating the suet, but I'm not throwing things at him. So he did survive, but still, I live with that power of my actions. You know, be careful. Okay, well, we are at 11:25, so I will begin our closing now. Thanks, everybody, for coming and for your contributions and your sincerity.